kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Come for the streaming. Stay for the hot takes on wet pancakes. There is no tunnel.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you?
I'm fine.
That's it? Just fine?
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. I'm fine. I'm not great. I'm not bad. I'm just here, and I'm like, fine.
She's here. She's queer. Yeah. She's fine.
Also here, Purnell and Chris, Party Cast. How are you guys doing?
I'm fine.
Sound that negative. I'm just fine.
I'm a generic store brand Dr. Pepper knockoff. Still good.
Thunder.
Oh, not he's Dr. Perky.
Dr. Perky. I'm sad.
Dr. B, actually.
I have Dr. Pepper and cream soda, but it's diet Dr. Pepper and cream soda.
Oh, that's what I've been drinking.
So it's like, it's really good. Like, but it's not as good as it could be.
It tastes like responsibility.
It tastes like I have to drink that because my liver's killing me.
It tastes like that's the only fucking thing I could find.
Maybe as far as Dr. Pepper, or are you telling me there's some kind of wild soda shortage up there?
I don't know if it's just my area, but like any specialty sodas are unavailable to find. Like, anything that's not just plain Mountain Dew or Diet Mountain Dew, you're not going to find.
I'm actually a little jealous because David wasn't able to find the Diet Dr. Pepper and cream soda when he went recently, and I was like, no!
I was at Walmart last night.
And I'm like, double no!
Walmart had literally zero Dr. Pepper.
I'm not fine anymore. This is all garbage now.
There wasn't even store brand Dr. Pepper on their shelves. They were just out of Dr. Pepper.
So, holy McGugget.
I mean, it is good stuff, though.
our thing is that we ordered groceries instead of me going and getting them. And we tried to get Dr. Pepper and cream soda. And on the online thing, they were like, they didn't have that. So we got Dr. B, which is our Central Texas HEB brand. She couldn't change it to regular Dr. Pepper instead of Dr. Pepper and cream soda because they had already done it. They were just letting us know, I guess. So
Dr. B.
we thought about turning them away or throwing them over the side of the house, but...
I just love the name.
Yeah.
And root beer's my jam, saying they have Baja Blast, just rubbing it in. I haven't had Baja Blast in weeks.
From Amazon.
They just, as soon as we started to get Baja Blast in the area, the coronavirus hit, and it all disappeared. And then it was just plain Mountain Dew, if you could find anything.
That's how they get you. That's how they get you.
I want Baja so bad. I miss it.
Have you ever seen the picture of all of the family of generic Dr. Peppers?
No.
Yes. I was actually about to mention that too.
Yeah, it's made the rounds, but yeah, there's somebody took a picture of all of the different that they could find, I guess. And there's some great ones. I wanna give a couple that are.
Wasn't a rival talking about doing a fighting game based around Dr. Sodas?
Oh, that would be great. I don't know.
He tweeted it out as a joke a couple of years ago, and it got, like, really popular. And he's like, oh, I guess I have to learn how to code a game now.
And I'll be honest with you, I would buy that shit.
Well,
I
would too. Choose your fighter. We've got Mr. Pig from Piggly Wiggly.
Nice.
Dr. Zip, Z-I-P-P. Dr. W, Dr. Pops with a Z. Dr. Choice. Pop. Dr. Choice is the best choice. That's the brand. Dr. Wells. This just sounds like a doctor. But then, Dr. Dazzle.
Just send me that picture. We'll make that the picture for the episode.
All right. I'm gonna
send it to Dazzle.
You. I'm going to title it Dr. Dazzle and then send it to you.
Dr. Episode.
Dr. Episode, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Perfect. I love when we come up with these. Love when we come up with the title and image in the actual episode.
Yeah, it saves me a lot of work.
Right? Naming things is hard.
I just write this shit down. Good.
Dr. Bob.
I will say that my absolute favorite generic soda name is from Save-A-Lot, and it's their Mountain Dew knockoff called Mountain Holler.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's Cole's favorite, too.
I hate that stuff. It's terrible.
I'm going to give that one a Dr. Wow. I love
it so much.
Dr. Holler.
I used to buy that shit by the case.
I like Dr. Smart.
Dr. Smart.
That's the doctor I would go to. And then there's Fiesta, Dr. Fiesta.
What about Dr. Doe?
I don't know. I don't see one here. There's Super Chill, Dr. Chill.
So is that our topic of the week? The topic du jour, topic of the day, is just going to be soda flavors?
It may as well be, because who doesn't like a good soda flavor conversation? Don't answer that.
Parnell, aren't you talking about quitting soda again?
I am, but I still like discussing the stuff. It's fantastic.
Are you quitting? Did you make your decision? Is it happening, or are you still on the fence?
It's definitely happening. The only thing I haven't decided on is if I'm going to take the one friend's advice or suggestion with making it more of like a treat thing, so I drink it rarely, but then when I do, it's like, oh yeah, it's a good ass soda.
See, that I can understand, but like completely eliminating all of it forever, I can't make that decision myself.
Yeah.
Forever almost never lasts. Like, to give you an idea of it, like, I gave up soda. It was almost unintentional. Like, it just kind of, like, it was me saying, I wonder if I could, and then I did. But I gave up soda for, like, a year and a half. And then when, the lockdown kicked in, that and beer ended up back on my register, because with beer, my decision was only drink beer in social situations. So, like, if I'm at a friend's house and they got beer, or if I'm at a bar with friends, I'm going to get beer. But if I'm at home, no beer. And that lasted for a long time, too. But it was like, okay, I'm not going anywhere, but I do miss beer. I'm going to buy some. I'm going to drink it. And then soda was the same thing, where it was like, I'll be at work and I want some caffeine. Or if I'm home and I just want something sweet to drink, I'm like, who the hell cares? It's quarantine time. And I just bought a 12-pack. And then I kept buying 12 packs. So it was like, I was back on the white horse and it wasn't stopping. The bucking wasn't stopping. So it just kept rolling. And then, like, recently I started thinking about it. I was like, that was that cool thing I had once, where I just stopped drinking all this stuff. I should go back and try it again and see how I do. So, and admittedly, if I just make myself understand, like, you don't have to, if you drink one bottle, you don't necessarily have to start scratching your neck and feeding it for your next fix. Just treat it like a thing that is something you're tasting. And oddly enough, this is going to sound gross, but I actually water soda down a lot of the time now, too.
Like, yeah, you're gross. Just, fuck off.
I know. But it's specifically because of the last time I gave it up. And then when I drank some, the initial drink was me tasting a new flavor of soda. And it was like, this is okay, but man, it's too sweet. Partly because I've been drinking a lot of sparkling water. My taste buds shifted a little for better.
Yeah, I get that sometimes. If I don't drink soda for a while, when I drink it, it's like, wow!
Exactly. Your eyes all bugging out like, it begins. So at that point, I know it sounds gross if you drink soda consistently, but as a person who's like, oh, this is too sweet, if you grab a sparkling water that's also cold and you pour it in there, you get a light flavor from whatever sparkling water flavor you're drinking. Plus, it's not really changing the soda flavor so much as it's diluting it. No. So it doesn't really make it gross. It just lightens it a little.
To use sparkling water is one thing. Like, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, like, you using warm tap water.
Oh, God, no, that's disgusting. What kind of barbarian do you take me for? Jesus, man. But no, I would never do that. That's just too much. Like, actually, who am I kidding? I take that back. I have done it once, and that's why I don't do it anymore. Because it really isn't very good. But sparkling, even warm sparkling, does the trick, and I'm okay with doing that.
I might try that.
You should. Like, trust me.
I don't mind sparkling water. It's seltzer water that I don't like.
I think it's just because you're human, Joe. Like, no, sparkling with, like, seltzer water is not good. Like, I have relatives who have consumed seltzer water and talked it up like it was a great thing. And, I mean, admittedly, your taste buds can adjust to it.
No,
it's not to say you can't.
Literally, clowns drink it as a prank.
God. Yeah. For all we know, that's actually seltzer. For all we know, that's actually sparkling water, and they just didn't tell us. They realized down the road, I was like, you know, we don't have to do this to ourselves. We're actually talented individuals. We're not the butt of our own jokes here. Let's just use sparkling water. What about the audience? For the hell with the audience. They don't even know. Look at me getting splashed with seltzer.
They're paying money to watch clowns throw pies at each other.
Would pay money for that. Honestly, speaking of which, that's one thing that bugs me lately. This is like a weird side, but it's just how it happens. I go to weddings, you know, they have the cake. No one's smashing the cakes anymore. No one does that. You notice that? It's frustrating to me. I go to these weddings. I love my friends. I want to see them, you know, declare their love in front of the world, and they don't want to see them smash each other up with cake. It's just the way it's supposed to be. Yeah. It's a tradition.
We shoved cake into each other's faces during our wedding.
That's right, because you're supposed to. In some respects, it's like, I see it also as like, hey, this was a really stressful ordeal. We had to get all of these decorations set up. Everything worked out perfectly fine. Everyone was happy. We said our vows. Now we just loosen up. Here, eat some cake. Boom. Just eat it. And everyone's entertained. Everyone's having a good time. I know I have heard the it ruins the makeup argument. And I guess I can get that too. Because I've never been, as you can tell from any image of me you've ever seen, makeup and I don't care about each other. but at the same time, I'm like, this is your day. If you want to walk around with like cake up, so what? What's someone going to do? It was a great wedding up until she got that cake all over her face. And then I just couldn't anymore. I'm like, crap, it's my special day.
Come on, most weddings suck anyway. Let's be honest. Most weddings are just boring.
Yeah, until the cha-cha slide kicks up and ramped up to 11.
I will say, I will brag. I think I had a pretty solid wedding. The ceremony itself took about 15 minutes tops. Because we wanted to make sure it was like snappy. We wanted to move this along. We didn't want people to get bored. I think it took longer for everyone to get seated than it took for the actual ceremony. Funny part.
I just pictured this pastor being like, so Joe, you take this dame, so ass, you take this goon, bada bing, bada boom, you be married, yeah, the smooching, eh? That's it. I would see that.
There is actually something kind of close to that because we forgot the rings.
Whoa.
Yeah. I was under the impression that Ashley had the rings because she was like super protective of the rings. She carried them everywhere. She took care of them. I was under the impression she had them. She was under the impression that my best man had them. He was under the impression that I had them. No one had them. They were on the dresser at home. So we had
no one was under the pressure of the desk.
we had tiny little plastic souvenir rings from our tables, and we used those in the ceremony. He was like, do you take this symbol as a sign of blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, yeah, it'll do.
It's adequate.
Yeah.
it's a living.
Yeah, and then after that 15 minutes, the catering hall was pretty much an old church. So the ceremony was held in the church area and the catering hall was in the side area and everything was just in one building. So people just walked 20 feet over to the catering hall, sat down, and the one-ups played the wedding.
One up.
Yeah, buddy. One up.
Yeah, that would be something cool to hear. I have a wedding play out to that. But like, honestly, I have come to feel as though I think weddings are an enjoyable time. It's just, there's certain elements where you're like, I can't imagine a person that's not the bride and the groom being excited for the vows and the walk down. And heaven forbid if you got like a full blown, I'm trying to think of whether it was Catholic or what, but I went to one wedding where They had to walk around the entire church and light candles every step of the way. And I'm like, who the hell is doing this? Like,
see, fuck why that. Is this a thing? No.
Yeah, like, that's just work, man. We paid money for work? No, screw that. Look, let me just say I love you. She can say it back. We can smash some cake. And everybody wins because now it's a party. I don't want to spend thousands of dollars for work.
Cole, what was your wedding like?
Oh, we got married standing in front of the fireplace at my mother-in-law's den. And it was very short notice. It was 5 years, our 5-year anniversary on the nose. And basically, we only did it because everybody was giving us grief. Because it'd been 5 years. Number one was two.
When are you going to get married?
Yeah, it was all we kept hearing. No, so
fuck you, right now.
We went to the courthouse. We got a license. We called my mother-in-law's best friend and asked if her husband would officiate. And he said, yeah. And I said, see you tonight at 7. and that's what we did. And we didn't have, like, Dee's brother is still super pissed at us because we didn't invite him. I was like, you don't even fucking like me. Why do you care?
I thought this would be the moment we turned it all around.
You don't give a fuck about me. My mother-in-law, she pulled together an impromptu ham dinner, and we didn't even have a cake. She made a ham dinner, and we were like, okay, cool, thanks. And then we went home.
That works.
And I've always heard that, like, the more you spend on your wedding, the more likely. I didn't even wear a dress, come to think of it. We just stopped at Walmart, and I got a white t-shirt and a white pair of jeans, and David got a pair of khakis and a white button-down. And you're like, good enough. I don't care. Yeah, there's no pictures of
it. At least I had a goddamn suit on.
I was like, I don't fucking care. Didn't mean anything to either one of us.
Just picture Colby out there, like, you ready for that? I don't give a shit!
I really didn't. Like, David was like, "What's this?" And I was like, "Absolutely not." There were no flowers. There was no decorations. It was just, "Can I sign the paper?" Cool. Let's go. Get out of here. And I mean, it sounds very anti-romantic and all that, but I mean, we're coming up on our 20th anniversary, so we did something fine. So February will make 20 years. So I guess we're doing all right. But God, I have to say that out loud, but.
Yeah. What out loud?
That it's been 20 years.
Yeah, if it makes you shoot, be happy about that. I mean, it could be worse.
Yeah.
It could totally be worse. Honestly, 20 years is pretty damn awesome.
Yeah.
You got to smile about that shit.
I mean, we're doing better than it. Let's see. David's brother and his ex were married 3 different times over the course of our marriage. But they, you know. They all kept saying we weren't going to make it, so hey, maybe they knew something. Yeah, they got married, they got divorced, and then they got remarried, and then they got divorced, married other people, got divorced from them, got remarried, got divorced a third time, and now they're both married to different people again.
What the hell?
And I'm sitting over here going, what did I do wrong? Different. Yeah, they were just, it's wild. It's absolutely wild.
No, but that makes my head hurt.
Mm-hmm.
It makes for a wild adventure, yeah, though.
It made for an and it was funny because on the 4th of July, it was Dee's brother and the ex-wife were here. And these are their respective spouses. And I'm like, what the fuck are you two doing? What do you think you're doing here? I'm calling it already. I'm going to be fucking going to their wedding again in a year. I'm telling you.
Just don't go. Be like, no, no. You're not getting another wedding gift. This is not happening.
We don't do that, though. Like, there's never been, nobody gave wedding gifts when we got married, and we've never given gifts to. It's not a common thing in Dee's family to, like, yeah. When I had number one, my mother-in-law was like, you get one baby shower, and that's it. And she was not shitting.
But at the same time, I can't even fault her for that. She's basically saying, look, money doesn't grow on fucking trees. You get married one time, and that's it.
Number one was born. had a baby shower. I didn't fucking know anybody there. All these families. Mom organized it. By the time number three came to pass, and I want to point something out. If you're not familiar with my kids, there's huge age gaps in my kids. I didn't have shit from kid to kid. I was starting all over every time because infertility's a bitch. And so, like, there's 3.5, almost 4 years between one and two. And then there's 5 years between two and three. Yeah,
you can number. I'm proud of you.
Math is hard.
She's a math magician.
5 years. Yeah. But so, you know, it was all over again every time. And by the time number three come along, and number one was nine at this point, and my mother-in-law goes, I already told you, you had your one, you ain't getting another. Try to find you some friends and get them to have you a baby sprinkle. I was like, okay.
A baby sprinkle.
A baby sprinkle is when you get together with other women to celebrate a subsequent pregnancy, and yet they only give you diapers. They don't give you clothes or anything. It's just diapers.
I thought that was like a ice cream snack.
I'll just have the baby
sprinkle.
No. That's how you get the baby.
Hi-yo.
Well, ice cream is how you get pregnant?
Yes. Yes, Joe.
Okay. That explains a lot about what I know in life and
where do babies come from? Ice cream.
Oh my lord. Anyway, we have some games to talk about. Should we dive into them this week? Should we get this going?
I suppose we should, because if we don't, they'll break my legs again.
We will, and it's fun. First game to talk about tonight.
It's fun. How's it fun? They're my legs, damn it.
First game to talk about tonight is called Brigandine, The Legend of Runercia. I hope I said that right. Developed and published by HappyNet Corporation, released June 25th on the Switch for $49.99. The continent of Runercia is home to six major powers with more than 40 bases, 100 knights, and 50 types of monsters. Select a ruler, compose your platoons of knights and monsters, and march to claim enemy bases. The player chooses how they'll battle, so devise the best strategy to lead your nation forward toward continental conquest. How will your legend unfold? Purnell, how did your legend unfold?
It unfolded very slowly for a very long time, but it was an enjoyable slog.
Nice.
I feel weird saying slog because slog usually comes with a negative connotation, but I'm using it in an endearing sense in this dialogue here because for those who aren't familiar, Brigandine is actually a sequel to a game that came out before a number of our listeners were ever even born. It came out back in like 1997 or 1998. I can't remember which year it was, but one of those two, on the PlayStation 1. It was published by Atlas, and it bombed. but it was one of those games that when it came out, it got a low print, which is partly why it bombed. But then people got to talking about it after the fact, and it became what we are known, what we like to call a cult classic. It involved a lot of, you know, strategic warfare using animal or critters. I love how I say critters, but mythological beasts being led by, you know, government rulers, essentially. So this game kind of takes up after that. It's not a direct sequel. It's just more of that style of gameplay in a new continent with new rulers. And the way it works is at the beginning of the game, they kind of just set the stage for you to choose one of six rulers that exist on the continent. And through various reasonings between each continent, they ultimately all come to the same conclusion, which is I got to kick the snot out of the other five continents and then and govern them so that I can bring the continent all under one rule. So what ends up happening is, and also I'll preface this by saying that if you've ever played Dragon Force on the Saturn back in the day, you'll already have a decent idea of how map movement works, which is, I see, a good thing. You start out the game, depending on the ruler you choose, on a certain area of the map. And the map is consistent of a variety of different bases. Like Joe mentioned earlier, it's like 100 and something, like 140 bases or something. It's a lot of them. It's a lot of bases.
40 bases, 100 knights, and 50 types of monsters.
Thank you. Because I was like, I said 104. I was like, that seems like a lot. I think I over exaggerated.
Yeah.
But bases, it's 40 bases on the map, all strewn about said map. And the way it works out here is that when you start the game, you have control over a certain number of them. And each of those bases will have some unit station in them, or some of them will have unit station in them. Units consist of one rune knight general, which takes up any number of different classes that you might have heard of from like various other like RPG games, like the dancer, the lancer, the knight, the rune knight, et cetera, et cetera. And then beneath them, they have a variety of different monsters that might be under their command. The more mana power the unit has, the more monsters he can control of varying strengths and weaknesses. So, give an example. A typical troop might consist of a, what is it? Let me see, because I'm actually looking at it now, because it's easier just to read through it. So, it might consist of, say, a knight, and then beyond the knight, you'll have a cyclops, a gygus, a high dog, which is basically a horned coyote, and a dragon. So, that's one unit. And then you might have 3 to 5 units in one base on the map. Now, at this point, you have your units set up. They're all varying strengths. And, of course, each monster and each unit has its own skill set, its own terrain preferences, which determines what it does best on and where it actually does poorest on, as far as like map traversal goes. At this point, you have your various guys set up. And there's a phase that starts to get each round off called the organization phase. During this time, you can go to the different bases, look at your unit troops, your units and your troops, and add more units, add more monsters to a unit. You can move the units, the overall unit, to a different base to try to fortify. And you can basically just also go through a process known as summoning new monsters, which is where you spend mana to bring a new monster into the fold. Different bases let you summon different monsters. And you can also go on quests. Quests being where you send the troop out on like a sort of side mission. And the side mission can yield you various rewards, such as new weapons or armor to equip, whether it be for your knights or for your monsters. It can yield you a new rune knight, which when you recruit them, they become a new troop that you can command. And of course, just items you might find too. Items being used to, well, I'll get to that in a second. And then lastly, what you can do with these quests is you can just go on one for the sole purpose of gaining experience points for your different monsters and troop units. This is a good thing to do when your troop is a fledgling group that's weak and low on experience, because you don't want any chumps going out into the battlefield, because whew, you'll regret it. So after you've done all the moving of and sending troops to different bases and recruiting and setting up quests or whatever, you go on to the attack phase of a season. And what the attack phase is the time where you were able to push into the neighboring bases with the intent being to conquer those bad boys. So when you look at the map, every one of your, you know, your border bases, borders being bases that are adjacent to enemy bases, they will have a number stricken atop. That number represents the power of all the units combined in that base. Makes it an easy way for you to tell how strong or weak your group there is. You can then make a decision of whether or not you want to advance your troops into the neighboring base. So you compare the numbers and go, I think my numbers are higher, which means I have a better chance of winning this. Because numbers don't necessarily mean you're going to win. It just means your odds are better.
Yeah.
So you can then take that group and say, moving in, let's get this thing started. And you basically move the troops in. And then once you've made that decision, the game will switch to a hexagonal battle board. And this hexagonal battle board works like a typical strategy RPG. Your units go on one side of the map, and the enemy units go on the other. And the landscape placement is based on how you enter the base. It's like the defending unit will always be in the middle of the landscape. And then the attacking army will either come in from whatever direction the base they're coming from is. So it's like you can kind of tell where you're going to end up. And then each turn, there's an order of movement taken based on how fast the leaders of the troops are, i.e. the rune knight. So if the dancer is a fast unit, she'll go first, which means that for her turn, she and all of her monsters get to go. And you move them advance, you amass them along the board like you would a typical strategy RPG, with the terrain bonuses to boot. So again, some enemies might get higher evasion accuracy in different areas. Some will get lessened accuracy and evasion in various areas. And then eventually, you know, after that turn is done, the next unit group will go, and then the next unit group will go back and forth, until eventually you meet up on the battlefield, and it's time to, well, shed some blood. When this happens, battle takes an interesting turn, because this game does some stuff that I've not actually seen in any other games like this, which is kind of cool. For example, you can take two units and surround another unit, like an opposing unit. And when you do that, you lock them in place, which means the enemy unit can't flee. They're stuck there until someone comes and gets them out by, you know, knocking a guy out of the way, or you move one of your troops out of the way. In addition to that, you can, say, take two of your units and position them adjacent to each other within one or two hexes from each other, and you create a wall so that the enemy can't actually get through it. So you can actually build a, like a pretty much a rampart of sorts to prevent enemies from getting back to your back line if you want to set that up. Now, one other thing that's a little different with these games also is that there are two different types of attacks that can be done in the game. And amongst those two types of attacks, there's another variation. So there are skills, which as what they are, like a skill like make a weapon attack of sorts, or appendage attack if it's a monster. And then there's magic attacks. Magic being what you'd expect. Heal, venom, fire, whatever. Varying ranges and all that good stuff in area of effect. Now, in addition to that, though, there are two types of those things. Attacks you can use after you've moved, and attacks you can only use if you do them without moving the unit. So it also incentivizes you to have situations where you place a unit in a way that on the next turn, they'll be in position to use their new move, because the enemy will be in a position for you to actually act without having to advance closer to them. So it adds an extra element of strategy there. Now, as you're fighting on the battlefield, your goal is simple. Within 12 turns, if you're the opposing unit, you want to either kill off all the generals or get one of your units onto their base by turn 12. If you can do either of those things, you'll take over their base and advance forward. Otherwise, you get repelled and it's back to the drawing board. If you defeat the general of a troop, they will flee, and every monster that they had in command on the field will flee with them. Except sometimes the monsters won't flee and they'll join your unit instead, so you can steal their monsters from them.
Nice.
So the interesting thing about this, though, is that unlike a lot of, you know, strategy RPGs, you're used to playing them with the expectation that you got to, one, clear every monster out, you got to defeat everybody, and B, you don't lose. It's like, I'll never lose. If you lose, it's like game over or something. But in this game, you're going to lose matches because, quite frankly, sometimes they're going to attack you and you won't be able to defend yourself because you'll be weaker than them. And other times, you just, quite frankly, will be outmatched and you need to back the hell up because you don't want to let any of your monsters get captured or killed, because when they die, you got to work through resources to resurrect them, because sometimes it just doesn't quite happen. It's not cheap to resurrect your monsters, and then if you don't, well, they eventually end up being gone forever. Now, you might be asking yourself, why would you want to resurrect a monster when you could just summon new ones? Well, that's because units level up by way of getting experience points in this game, too. So, get enough kills in, you know, you level them up, they get stronger and stronger, until eventually they can class change, too. They can advance to better, more powerful forms, which also yields them better skills. So once you get stronger monsters, you're going to be working your ass off to protect them, because if you lose them, you got to start all over again with a new dude or pay the price to resurrect, neither of which are favorable. So keep them bad boys from dying. So it changes a lot of the game in the way these things play. Between the fact that you want to strategize and get the leaders and not so much the monsters, but you also want to fight in a way that gets you enough experience during the fight so you don't feel like you wasted a skirmish. You'll be pretty much bouncing out a good bit. So, honestly, I enjoy that element of the game quite a bit. And after you, every once in a while, after you complete a battle, the game will go into like a bit of a like a story sequence that might yield more information in regards to the characters and the in the drama that's taking place on the Runaria or Runercia. And then sometimes you might even get a new unit out of the story revelation. So again, more units, more power, more tactical opportunities. Bada bing, bada boom. So you might have heard all that, and I hope you went, that sounds freaking amazing. That's a fantastic game. Because it is a fantastic game. It even has music by the guy who does the OSTs for the Skya games. I picked it up immediately when I heard it. I was like, that's a Tempe Sato tune. And it was. So you got more of that guy's music popping in. So if you heard this and went, this game is amazing, I'm going to tell you, it honestly is a fantastic product. There's only one caveat to that, and that is, how capable are you of dealing with a lot of battles? Because there will be plenty of them. So let's say, for example, on one season, you decide you want to advance on 2 to 3 bases because you got the odds, the numbers in your favor. Let's just push out. You still have 3 battles. At this point, you go into the attack phase and each battle plays out. And each battle could take you 10 to 30 minutes, depending on how pushy you want to be with it, how aggressive you are, or if you want to, you know, take your time and strategize and plan it out. And then after you won that battle, you got to do another one that could take you 10 to 30 minutes. And then another one that could take you 10 to 30 minutes. Now, of course, as you get stronger units, if you can pull that off without dying, your battles could get to be a little quicker because you might even get to the point where you're just dominating the other enemies. But that's not a guarantee. So you may have a situation where your battles might take you a fair bit of time to get through. And with that mentioned, that was like the main hiccup I have at the game. There was also the potential for like the story to kind of drag on because it's a very serious story. There's no humor in this game for the most part. It's all serious dialogue voiced in Japanese. But for me, I'm okay with that. I actually liked hearing about what my country was up to. I don't even want to pronounce the damn name of the country because it's annoying. I just know it's like the Mo Sulay sisters and a sword, and she wore a red dress. That's what I got. But I actually liked the actual situation as it played. I liked listening to it, but it was also a very dry story. Like, it wasn't, there wasn't a lot of humor popping off or anything like that. So that might be something that might turn a few people off between those two things. But if none of that, if what you heard didn't make you think, oh, and I also forgot, I should mention this too. The monsters, when they evolve, they just kind of advance down a tree. They just become stronger with new skills. But the Rune Knights, when they class change, they can advance along their skill their class tree, or they can change classes entirely. And depending on how much you've battled with that class and how high you've gotten their proficiency, you can carry skills across the various trees. So you can, if you can keep the units moving, you can get some pretty interesting customized units. You might get a dancer with mage skills, or you might get a fighter with cleric skills, like a paladin. You can get some pretty cool combinations going off there too. So, of course, then the hiccup then is keeping track of all your rune knights and being like, I have this much mental capacity that I can track all the skill trees that these guys are taking. But you could also just go down their coordinated paths too and just make them stronger versions of their current selves. And that's not a problem either. You know, yeah. It's just all fun times. So, but there's I'm rambling here, so I'll cut this a little short.
Yeah, sounds like there's a lot to the game. So at $50 price tag, what do you think of it?
I honestly think it's a genuine buy. It may well be one of the best strategy role-playing games on this console. Again, it's not Disgaea in the sense of unit-to-unit movement, except for when it is on the skirmish maps, but it's like more of a grand-scale strategy RPG. And if you can get coming on that, you're in for a fantastic time. I very much liked my time with this title.
Awesome.
Fine.
All right, next game to talk about is called Dungeons 3 Complete Collection, developed by Realmforge Studios, published by Calypso Media. Complete Collection available on Steam right now for $39.21. Your price may vary depending on when you hear this or your region. Obviously, Steam is weird with their pricing. At last, the Dungeon Lord has successfully united the forces of evil and established his dark empire. Time for the next step in his most diabolical quest, expansion. Chris, tell us about Dungeons 3 Complete Collection.
Okay, Dungeons 3. So, it's funny, like, it's always awkward for me to review PC games because I can't have it, like, up and staring at it while talking. Because I usually have my console games on the other TV. So I, like, have to do it entirely from memory. Anyways.
Do you not have dual monitor set up?
Not dual monitors. No, I have I have a TV next to a monitor.
We got to get you set up with dual monitors.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I'll review Dungeons 3. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, so Dungeons 3, of course, is the third in a series of... well, okay, so as I understand, because I haven't played Dungeons 1 or Dungeons 2, that Dungeons 1 was like basically a dungeon building simulator. And then Dungeons 2 added in real-time strategy, like combat to it. So Dungeons 3 kind of takes that, the combination and, you know, sort of adds to that, you know, just several different aspects. There's actually a lot to this game. I have to really pick and choose what I want to talk about here. But, yeah, so the story is, yeah, that the character of Evil, who is you, although represented in the game by a giant suit of armor person like you'd expect to see in Lord of the Rings or something, has conquered all of the world except for the continent to the east. So, this is, you know, the way the narration puts it is that he sent his greatest soldiers on ships to conquer the east, and then all those ships sank. So then he built even better ships and sent his second best, you know, soldiers, and then those boats sank. And so, yeah, he decided to take the next step, which is to, I guess, turn himself into an evil shadow. And he just went right on over there, not bothering with this ocean nonsense. And then you basically get to learn how to move around the RTS by stalking around with him as a shadow, avoiding torchlight from like all the good guys and stuff. And you go to possess this dark elf lady whose adoptive father is a paladin who is like the ultimate good guy, aka the big bad guy for you. And yeah, she's as in the game's lore, dark elves are inherently evil beings, but she has overcome her evil and is being good through great effort. That's a Skyrim quote. and she's overcome her evil with great effort. Anyways,
you have an addiction, you know, Chris.
Yeah. Then the shadow possesses her. And of course she decides, you know, she realizes that evil's where it's at the whole time. So, then the game has you building dungeons. And the way that dungeons work in this game is that you start with the heart of the dungeon. It's literally like just this big glowy red rock that's chained to a thing. And it's, both, well, for one, it generates your sort of peons, your peon class, which is your, little goblin guys, snots is actually what they're called. And, they dutifully do whatever you click on to tell them to do. So they'll dig tunnels for you. They'll clear out rooms. They'll build rooms. They'll gather resources, take them to the treasury. If you build a treasury, you know, they do all the grunt work. And, they're great because if they get killed for any reason, because sometimes your dungeon will get invaded by heroes, then the heart just produces more of them up to a cap. And of course the cap you can raise, through leveling up. We'll get back to leveling up in a minute. But yeah, basically, so you'll have, you know, like a starter set of five, and they just constantly regenerate, so you don't have to worry about them dying. So if you want to, you can just like slap them around yourself. There's like friggin' alerts going on everybody's cell phone.
Nice.
Anything
important?
An Amber Alert in like 100 miles away. Amber Alerts are very, do they have Amber Alerts in other states besides Texas? Okay.
Yep.
They across the country. It just varies by your area. How far the alert goes.
Yeah, I thought they started in Texas or something. But anyways, yeah, it's like they're worthless in Texas because it's always someplace that's like 300 miles away.
Kentucky's kind of the same way because everything is like either very far east or very far west.
Did I just hear Joe's phone go off?
No.
Oh. I thought I heard a phone go off in the background too.
I heard maybe that's another.
Anyway, sorry, completely derailed this review.
Just a little. just a
little. Emergency derailment. Okay, so your little worker guys are there, and basically you have them dig up whatever resources you need, clear out whatever room you need, so that you can create a place or an area where you can start generating and hiring soldiers, and your soldiers. are going to be like your goblins and trolls and things like that. And as the game progresses, you get more and more types of horde characters that you can unlock. You get a magic class of like an undead class, and you know, you can just keep building and building this army. And then, depending, of course, on the stage, you send these guys up to the surface where they will wreak havoc. And glorious havoc in, you know, a very accessible, I'm going to say, especially to me, who, you know, I'm not an RTS expert at all. So I was very appreciative of the fact that it does not overcomplicate the combat. You basically, a lot of your characters kind of act automatically, but you will also control this, the dark elf hero, villain in the game, who can, you know, cast like, you know, high end spells and things like that. And, you know, you just deal. Basically, you know, you conquer an area and turn it evil, and yeah, the different stages will have like different things that you can do. And like I said, sometimes the stages will have a little bit more to do underground, such as getting invaded, where you can set up guard posts and things like that. But you know, I never really felt too threatened by this game, because like, even if they get at your heart, if you can defeat them, then your heart just regenerates.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you don't actually have to worry too much about getting murderously killed. It's more about how well you can defeat them, which is pretty cool. And yeah, so it basically is all about building up your, like, your dungeon area and then sending your goons up to the surface and just destroying a peaceful, idyllic countryside until you face off against the ultimate good.
And then this is the complete edition, so this comes packed with a shitload of DLC. Have you been able to dabble in any of the DLC? Could you tell us about any of that stuff?
Yeah, a little bit. So, yeah, basically they came out with, I'm not exactly sure, and I don't have the page up, how many DLCs, but it's like 7 or 8, maybe 9 different, like, whole things. And yeah, each one is just like another set of missions and like some ridiculous stuff that goes down. I played a couple of them. One occurs in Fairy Tale Land, where you have to, defeat a goodly fairy godmother type of lady who, basically what she does is that she's, creating potions and things like that for the good guys. And so, and then they are trying to infiltrate your dungeon. So it's a bit more on the defensive side. And of course, it's more complex than some of the earlier levels of the main game. But yeah, on top of fighting off those soldiers, if you don't destroy her sources for those potions, then the hordes, or the good guys, the wonderful conquering armies that, you know, come down to defeat evil, are going to get stronger every time. So you kind of have a timer going where you have to like destroy these things. Otherwise you're going to have to deal with much stronger heroes. So, and yeah, there's a lot of stages that are like really clever like that. One of my favorites. Okay. So like the other games, this game is completely narrated by a lovely British voice actor whose name I did not look up. I think I looked it up just to confirm it was nobody famous that I knew. But anyways, so the narration of this game is like 100% comedy. Like it actually does have a great mechanical, you know, side to it, but like the story and everything that happens in the game, just don't take any of it seriously. It is completely ridiculous in the sense that the fourth wall is just constantly broken. They always refer to like all these other fantasy properties and things like that. Like I actually like that one of the DLCs is literally titled An Unexpected DLC. And they do actually have a direct Lord of the Rings parody in the DLC packs as well, like a separate one. So yeah, like this game is, you know, whether it's hilarious to you or not, kind of depends on your like appreciation for bad video game humor. I like it. So, you know, I enjoyed that it's so lighthearted and extremely colorful, by the way. The palette of it is just, you know, bright and shiny, even though it's evil. Anyways, there is a DLC where the long-suffering narrator, who will berate you for, you know, just about anything, and it will actually get into arguments with the main character, you actually have to fight him in one of the DLCs.
Nice.
And anything that he says just kind of happens. So.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, there's some amazing stuff here. So, yeah, on top of a fully fleshed out, like, 20 stages or so of actual, you know, the main core of the game, which, again, these campaigns can get pretty long because you're both building a dungeon and conquering an area with the army that you've created. On top of, you know, 20 stages of that, and all of this, you know, these DLC packs and things like that, there's also a skirmish mode where you can just basically set some parameters and get a lot of parameters and get a random, like, you know, a random thing made for you so that you can then play through it. You can also play multiplayer both competitively and cooperatively.
Yeah.
And it has like a separate multiplayer section for creating rooms and things like that. And then the skirmish thing, I guess I didn't really play the multiplayer skirmish thing because I didn't have time to check out the multiplayer, but they have them separate. So that means that you can both directly challenge somebody you know and also like create a room and, you know, fight random people or cooperate with such. So yeah, just like, man, if there's one goofy ass RTS that you plan on buying this year, this one will take you all year no matter what. This is a primo example of just so much content in a game.
So if you were let down by the lack of humor in Brigandine, Dungeons is where it's at.
Dungeons is. I mean, actually, there were some real good jokes in there. Again, it's one of those things, I forget what his name is, but there's a British stand-up comedian who, whether he's funny or not, doesn't really matter because his jokes, he's hardly ever been televised or videoed, but he just goes out there and just tells joke after joke after joke, and he'll stand up there for 6 hours and tell over 2,000 jokes.
Wow.
So it's kind of like, you know, he doesn't have to be the funniest person in the world, but by God, he's gonna win you over with quantity. I think some people just watch him just to see, you know, just to be impressed by the fact that he could just rattle off that many jokes. And that's kind of how this game feels a little bit. But again, at the core of it, there's actually like serious mechanics going on. And apart from the fact that, you know, I think this game isn't going to torture noobs too badly, which means that probably if you're like a age-old, you know, RTS guy who never put down Warcraft or anything like that, it might end up on the easy side for you. But again, there's multiplayer, there's random skirmishes, there's all kinds of stuff to keep you busy. So, yeah, I couldn't find anything wrong with this game, honestly.
Well, then for the $39.21 price tag, what do you say?
Yeah, for this game, all that DLC and more. And the soundtrack. They just throw in the soundtrack, too, as a separate download.
Nice.
So, yeah, like, absolutely worth it. Go and buy this if you like RTSs, if you like funny fantasy stuff. I like both of those things. And I do plan on, you know, yeah, digging through more of this one myself. Try to get through all those DLCs as well.
Cool. All right, yeah. Well, you have another game to talk about. That's called Alphadia Genesis, developed by Xcrete, published by Chemco, released July 3rd on Xbox One and Windows 10 for $14.99. Hoping a treaty signed to end the use of clones for conventional warfare has not been violated, a joint investigative team is put together to find out the cause and bring those responsible to justice. However, the adventure appears to be far more volatile than anyone could have first imagined. Chris, what does that mean?
What does anything mean? No. Okay, Alphadia Genesis. So I had sworn that I had reviewed this game before and on something, and I looked it up on Steam, and it's like I have it on Steam, but I didn't remember actually playing it. So I think what I reviewed was Revenant Saga. But then I found out that Alphadia Genesis is also on the Wii U. So I'm like, did I get this on the Wii U a long time ago? But anyways, okay, I don't know. You know, as far as my faulty memory goes, this is a brand new experience for me. So, but yes, this is actually not a brand new game. This is a game that's been out for a while. Like I said, it came out on Wii U. I think that's the only console it's on at the moment. So yes, Alphadia Genesis follows along the path. So Chemco and Xcrete games are, you know, for better or worse, they're a little bit cookie cutter. Like, you see a lot of the exact same art styles, the same tiles and palettes, and very similar music. you know, a similar type of plots. Usually it's almost always four characters of differing backgrounds and, you know, different quirks and whatnot get together and, you know, defeat an evil. And this game's kind of no different from that, except that it does actually draw lines with another game in the series, which is Alphadia, of course, which is one of their earliest joints. And I've actually played through most of Alphadia, so I can at least speak to that. It was on, of course, these are all mobile games originally, and Alphadia was on the 3DS. And Alphadia kind of dealt with, yeah, this thing of like clones being a thing of, you know, basically human clones that kind of act like machines. They're programmed and, you know, used for tools in battle and stuff like that. And a lot of that, a lot of that game has to do with kind of discovering the nature of clones and especially befriending a, you know, a more sentient but powerful clone named Enna, who is a, you know, a series 2000 clone. And, you know, because there's different series model numbers and things like that. And, you know, so the game is largely centered around her. And in fact, even other games refer to her in like very like cameo ways. And this game, you actually do run into her. So this is a totally different setting, we assume, but it does have this same character from the original Alphadia. So whether this game is meant to take place in, you know, before or after the original Alphadia, we don't know. I'm guessing before because it says Genesis, and plus the way that you find her, you know, she has no memories. And I think that's true for both games, but I think the first game explains her origins. So whatever.
I know we covered the original Alphadia on the 3DS. For the life of me, I can't tell you who covered it without listening to the episode.
I don't think it was me because I bought it.
Yeah, it might have been me for all I know.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about Chemco X Create. You play enough of them, and they do start to run together.
Yeah.
Joe trying to convince us he reviews games. How silly. Yeah,
back in the day.
Why, back in the day?
Back in the day, I used to review a whole bunch of games on this show, but then I got too much shit to do, and I let you kids do it instead.
Oh, man. Grade A senior voice.
Goddamn right.
So yes, so you are playing in this game as the hero Frey, and his sister joins, and again you run into Enna. And since there's more character slots, I, you know, there's a couple more characters you run into who join you who are suspiciously like characters from the original Alphadia. There's like the kind of what do you call it, like aristocratic lady, very erudite and stuff, but she's joined by a real dickhead of a dude who hates everybody and it's like untrusting, and like that happens in both games. And so I'm kind of like, are they just retelling the game? Is that what's going on here with mostly different characters? Anyways,
Ms. but I go Eternal on about Eternal Rage dropping 300 bitties. What's that all about?
Dropping bits.
I
got paid. I figured I should share the love.
Nice. Well, George, thanks you for sharing the love. Although I think that sound clip was like super loud compared to the rest of the show.
Probably.
Hey, that's what happens when you switch computers and your shit doesn't work the way it used to anymore.
He's going to deafen everybody.
Yes. Yes, I will.
All right. So yes. So you have like this cast of characters and stuff, and, and, you know, you go through the adventure of, like, basically investigating why Series 1000 clones are suddenly attacking people who own them. But then they're also, like, kind of doing this thing of, like, sort of giving clones, like, because it was discovered that they were sentient, and therefore they've been given rights. And, like, they kind of, you know, it sort of deals with all that. I'm not going to say it's a stand-in for racism or anything, but it's kind of a JRPG trope. And, you know, like, these Chemco games are usually pretty good about, like, even though their stories tend to follow some well-worn paths, they're at least intriguing reads. And I especially liked Alphadia because I liked the character Enna, and I liked, you know, like, kind of their exploration of the idea of clones and, you know, sentience and things like that. So I do actually like the story in this game. Now, mechanically, which is, of course, mostly what we talk about with Kemco games because of the sameness of everything else, it actually is a little bit different, of course, from Alphadia because the battles are actually rendered fully in 3D. So it's got polygonal 3D battles, which is not the first time we've seen that. We've seen that in the Revenant games, too. And I think Sephirothic Stories had it. I don't really remember because I didn't cover Sephirothic Stories. But there's a few Kemco RPGs that actually go into, like, 3D mode. And in this one, it looks good, but maybe a bit dated. I would say it actually looks like an HD remake of, like, a PlayStation 2 game or something. Like, it definitely, like, is different. And if you're, you know, kind of tired of the spritiness of it, then it does shake things up a little bit. Interestingly, it's a little on the easy side, even compared to the original Alphadia, and it only has two difficulty settings by default, and that's easy and normal. So it doesn't actually have any hard modes, which is interesting, but it does have like 6 different DLC like things to make it even easier, like tripling your experience points, tripling your SP points, which is how you grow your skill set. Which are is the energy system, which is, you know, energy with an I, which is basically a really simplistic, like, 3 elemental attack system. You know, different characters are different elements. You can equip items to learn other elements, and it what it ends up is just being this kind of simplistic. You know, what's the enemy weak to? Okay, I'll use my strongest one of these.
No,
you know, it's kind of like that. Although you can, you know, you can set auto tactics and things like that. It has the, you know, vanguard and rear guard formation thing, but it doesn't group characters together in those. So it's definitely on the simple side of, like, Kemco mechanically. That is to say, you know, there's a lot of innovations they've made since this game came out. This one is about as basic as it gets, on that. In fact, typically Kemco X Create RPGs have the external shop system where, you know, enemies drop a special kind of currency that you can then either play the lottery or, like, you know, just straight up purchase some, like, stuff to make the game even easier. But this game actually has you go to a shop to spend those points, and the points are generally not given in battle randomly, so you don't just sit there and save them up. You actually have to find them in places, which... Interestingly, the game has a zoom in feature so that you can better see, like, the little glowy spots where you can actually find more treasure. Although you can't move with the game zoomed in. I don't really get that. The other thing is no on-screen map. You have to switch to the map.
Ew.
Like, with a button. Yeah, it's like, it's interesting because, you know, as many of these as I've played, it's always interesting to go back in time to one that's, like, more like 7+ years old, which I believe this one is. And
see all the quality of life changes that have shown up over the years.
Yeah, exactly. So this is by no means a bad game. In fact, I quite like it. I like the story. They were taking themselves, I think, a little more seriously back then. So there wasn't this, like, oh, I'm a cat, but actually I'm a god. You know,
it's, no, it's less, geez. There's been a few of those.
Yeah, the As Divine series deals with that.
Yep.
So this predates the As Divine games, I believe. And it's just, you know, the hero is, like, a little two-dimensional. Like, you know, he's all about justice and being fair to everybody and stuff like that, which may come off as a little boring. But I kind of like it. you know, I like that the hero's actually kind of a goody-two-shoes. There's a lot to like here if you are into very basic but, you know, like, simpler time type of JRPGs, you know?
Yeah.
And again, like I said, the actual writing of the story is a little bit better in this one than I think the goofier set. So if you actually do like JRPGs for the stories, then this one is going to be more intriguing to you than other offerings from the company. And again, the music is fantastic. It's always fantastic. I don't really know who composes for Kemco X Create, if it's the same person or what. They always have such similar themes, but, like, the music's so good in these games. I always love it. And yeah, this one is no exception to that. It is, you know, lovely aesthetically. Again, it's a bit on the old side. Oh, and the other way that you know it's old, an older mobile port game, is the fact that when you move around on the world map or in towns or whatever, like the screen does jitter a little bit. It doesn't have that smooth.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, it has a little bit of that, the jitteries. So if you're not used to that, then that may become a little bit of an eyesore.
Well, but that aside, $15 across Windows 10 and Xbox One, what do you think?
I still say this is a buy it if you're a fan of Kemco RPGs, because I really like the Alphadia series for the story. And I don't know, I do kind of like the world of it, even though, like I said, all of these games do seem cookie cutter. Like, you, when you play enough of them, you do actually start to gravitate towards favorites. And Alphadia is actually one of my favorites in the X-Create series. So on that, I'm going to say it's worth it. On its directly comparing it to some of the newer games, I would say the newer games are better just because of the quality of life stuff, the ways that they keep it spicy and interesting. And of course, just the fact that, you know, things like the world scrolls by faster and you can see the map. although I will say on this computer, you know, because I actually have a nice computer now, like when the battles go 3D, like it's super ultra silky smooth. Like the graphics are just like, I was like, man, why can't the regular game with the 2D sprites look like this? Or at least move like this, you know? But again, it's just an artifact from porting it from mobile to computer, so.
I picked this up on Xbox and Windows 10. It's a Play Anywhere game, so if you pick it up on Xbox, you get it on Windows 10 as well. I should fire it up on Windows 10 and see how the battles look for me, now that I have a fancy new computer.
I like them. I just love...
What happened to, I'm not going to play games on the new computer?
Ooh.
I didn't say I'm not going to play games. I said I'm not planning on, like, I don't have... Like, people, they'll build computers because I have to play this game. I didn't have any games in mind when I set out to buy this computer. I bought it more as a quality of life enhancement, and that's what it's become.
And now it's time to become a Warzone master.
Oh, yeah. Fucking, I'm talking
with
about
your 130 frames.
I'm talking about playing a friggin' Kemco RPG on this thing, and you're comparing it to Warzone.
This thing can run on a delicious biscuit. I mean, it came from cell phones. It'll be just fine on a computer.
Oh, man. All right. One final game to talk about tonight is called Pick a Pix Pieces 2, developed and published by Lightwood Games, released June 30th on PS4 and Vita for $7.99. The latest installment in the popular Picture Crossword series contains 20 new massive mosaic Picross mosaics. Massive, yes, I just repeated myself because I can't read. Pick a Pix Pieces 2 features more than 400 new puzzle grids that come together to form spectacular pixel art masterpieces. Brunel, tell us about this one.
Okay, so it's Pick Curls. Ta-da, it's done. wait, there's more? I guess I should describe it.
Yes, explain to us what this game is.
The Realm of Pick Curls. So, for those who are unaware, Picross is equivalent to something akin to, I don't know, like a crossword, think of a crossword puzzle, but instead of filling in letters, you're filling in Scribble, like you're filling in the square. But in the case of these pick-a-color versions, you're filling in each square with colors that ultimately, when you get all the combinations right of the proper colors and the proper squares, you will get a cool photo. And with this, the way that you were filled, you know, to properly fill in the squares is that outside of the cross color puzzle, you'll have boxes with numbers in them. Those boxes represent the color that should go on a specific position in the grid. And the orientation is in order from left to right or top to bottom. And then also within those squares, there's a number, which indicates how many squares of that color are adjacent to each other. So let's say, for example, you have one blue, two yellow. That means you have within a square of like within a row of five squares. That means somewhere in that row of five squares, you're going to have one orange and then two yellow squares together. When you combine the vertical row, the vertical number and color combinations with the horizontal color and number combinations, you should be able to deduce just where those colors and number of colors should go. Now,
isn't Picross hard as hell to describe?
It really freaking is.
spatial reasoning is a thing I'm great with when it comes to board games, but I also suck at describing how to play those too, unless I got the board right there to point to stuff. But if you could understand a lick of what I just said about this, well then, let's move forward. And if not, I'm sorry, but just get to the end of the review and you'll hear my burp anyway. So once you've completed a picture in this game, unlike a typical Pit Girls game where you complete the picture and boom, there's your image. In this game, you're actually completing parts or pieces of a total photo. So you'll have 24 squares. And each of those squares is represented by a 15 by 15 grid or a 20 by 20 grid. And each time you solve one, you're just solving a part of a larger picture. Now, the interesting thing about that to me personally, I honestly prefer the Pit Cross games where you complete a puzzle, you get one picture. Move on, move on. Because even though you're making these giant photos that are combining individual squares to get one big picture, ultimately the picture still looks the same. It's not like a puzzle that you built at home where a 1,000-piece puzzle is going to be larger on your wall than a 100-piece puzzle would be, you know?
No.
So in a lot of ways, in this, it doesn't carry that same level of weight. It's just more work to do. With that said, though, a Pit Cross puzzle is a Pit Cross puzzle. And whether you're combining 24 to make one photo or doing 24 to get 24, you're still solving Pit Cross combinations. How satisfied you are with each one is left up to you, the player, but the gameplay is still just as fun as it's always been. Feature-wise, if you suck at Pit Cross and the deduction that goes into trying to get it right, they're genuinely pretty generous with how they let you play the game. It's very loosey-goosey. There's no penalization for, you know, taking forever to solve a puzzle, though nonetheless, that clock still is there just to kind of piss you off and make you go, it took me how long to solve that puzzle? My God. But aside from your personal pride, it does nothing to harm you. In addition, if you make any mistakes, there's an option just to click called the fix button, and it'll tell you how many errors you made, and then it'll remove the squares that you made an error on. So you literally can just, like, if you wanted to do that thing, you could just, like, just fill every square in with every color of one color, run fix, and it'll just tell you which ones are right and which ones are wrong right then and there. And you just do it until it's done.
That's so cheap.
However, it would be really cheap. It's doable, though. But by that same token, if you did that, why the hell are you playing Pit Cross?
Yeah,
you
seriously.
Just wasted your money. So it's like a combination of saying they give you a tool to pretty much be as cheap as you want. But what that tool actually does in a game like this is it allows you to play it without stress. You can sit down, you can work as hard as you want to try to solve the puzzle, and when you find yourself going, screw this, I'm tired, just kind of take a willy-nilly guess and then check fix, and if it didn't work, it didn't work. Or solve the whole damn puzzle, then click fix, and it'll just straight up tell you where you got it wrong. To me, that's a good quality of life stuff right there, especially if there's no unlocks involved. So it's literally just a matter of you sitting down, solving puzzles and getting your fix. They also have a colorblind mode, which, from what I could tell, it just lets you pull a color slider to adjust the color of the different squares. Honestly, I'm not quite sure how that would work for a colorblind person, because I'm personally not colorblind and I haven't played with a colorblind person. But hopefully what I just said there will make you go, wow, wait, I'm colorblind, and that would help me, because that's what colorblind mode is. So, ba-da! But it's just a good thing to have access to. Like, it's good they're at least trying to do it. So overall, I'm honestly fond of this game. I've always liked Pit Cross anyway. I've always wanted to try one of the Pit Cross games that involve using color instead of just the black and white squares, because it makes the pictures feel more vibrant, despite the game itself, in my opinion, being a tad bit harder. Overall, it's a relaxing time. The combination of the music, the no-frills gameplay, and the easy press-fix button just makes this for a straight-up relaxing thing to do when you just want to sit down and, you know, veg out.
Well, then $8 on PS4 and Vita, what do you say?
I think it's worth every penny. You get a lot of puzzles out of this thing. Again, 10 times 24, so 240 puzzles that combine to making 10 pictures. I think that's good money.
Yeah, that's a lot of puzzles.
Yes, it is. It's a lot of colorblind mode and clue marking and fix button presses.
Good stuff. All right. Well, that is it. We made it through another one. This was a quickie. Not even like an hour 20 yet.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And we talked about sodas.
If you want, I can go back and talk more about Brigandine.
No.
No, it's good. Bye.
No, we're pretty good. Music. Our friend Viking Guitar made a brand new song about wearing a mask. So we're going to play that. We're going to listen to Viking Guitar's Words of Wisdom. And does anyone have any final words?
I hope you like his song, but if you don't, well, sucks to be you.
Dr. Bye.
Dr. Bye.
No.
Perfect. Oh, mercy.
In these troubling times, you don't know what to do. So much clashing information, it's hard to know what's true. Experts might be lying, it's just an overblown flu. Well, I've got some news for you. If you don't wear a mask, you're a fucking piece of shit. You're either dumber than a rock, or you're just a fucking dick. Seeing people act like you makes me want to cry, but I just wish you'd stay the fuck inside. It truly is amazing just how stupid you can be to see all this information, yet that doesn't apply to me. I guess that inconvenience equals inhumanity in your self-centered prick philosophy. If you don't wear a mask, you're a fucking piece of shit. You can shout about your freedom, but we both know that's not it. I bet you lack the decency, I bet you lack the class to wash your hands after you wipe your ass. I know you think you're special on your stupid shitbag throne, but all of us are working while you're jacking off alone. We try to talk, but you bluster and you redirect, and you don't give a fuck who you infect. Now your feathers might be ruffled, your pride a little hurt, but please don't misinterpret, I mean to treat you like dirt. You deserve all of the ire of every passerby, because they know you don't care if they die. If you don't wear a mask, you're a fucking piece of shit. You fucking ignorant Neanderthal, what a fucking prick. Everyone that looks at you hates your fucking guts and knows that you're a worthless fucking butts. If you don't wear a mask, I just don't know what I can say. If you don't get the point yet, I could scream at you all day. It's not about your rights, it's about not getting sick. Now get it through your head, you worthless piece of